the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Hines with Vince Ferrara. Vince, what was your biggest takeaway from what Bill Hancock, Executive Director of College Football Playoffs, said?
Probably that college football is not going to be what it normally is. And him, you know, he wasn't willing to talk about hypotheticals or get into too much of that. But for him to lay that out, basically you can remove any thought that it's going to be normal. I thought that was noteworthy. And also that regardless of what the plan is, however it plays out and the decisions of when the games are or push back or whatever, they'll be ready to have a college football playoff. And then the third thing was that they haven't talked about had any discussions, I should say. Now, maybe that's technically just formal discussions. That doesn't mean that no one hasn't talked about it amongst themselves without having an official meeting for it. But he said they haven't discussed any expansion of the playoffs. So those would be probably my three.
Yeah, and that they could perhaps put that together if they played college football in the spring. How about that? So you wondered. All right, we're pleased now to be joined by Rob Lewis of VolQuest.com. Rob, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jimmy. How about you guys?
Doing fine. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate that. Several things to cover on the Tennessee front. We found out that this morning that Cade Mays, that appeal had not yet been filed until last week. So with all the scuttlebutt about, hey, how could Georgia get a quarterback from Southern Cal cleared? The Mays appeal was delayed. I know they were trying to be thorough. But, Rob, I will say I'm surprised that it wasn't filed until last week. What about you?
Yeah, a little surprised, Jimmy, but I don't think it's a comment on you know, whether or not he'll get eligible or not. But, yeah, I mean, just simply the fact that, you know, it hadn't been filed previously was surprising.
Yeah. In terms of Tennessee, Juroš Plavšić arriving last night. He's got to go into quarantine. I guess that's good news. At least he got back in the country.
Yeah, it is. I don't think that's a huge deal. I mean, in fact, I think one of the reasons that, Juroš and Santiago Vescovi, who are still – and Santiago is still not here, kind of delayed their arrival was simply, you know, they were able to do more at home than they'll be able to do – you know, here in Knoxville as far as working on their game. I know both guys were playing in regular high-level pickup games with, you know, professionals from, you know, their respective countries, members of the national team that could be able to work with their own, you know, trainers on, you know, skill work, which is, you know, not going on here in Knoxville. You know, guys, they all have their own basketballs that they're sharing. They're not playing five-on-five pickup, and the coaches aren't able to work with them yet in the off-season and on individual stuff as they normally do.
What do you expect out of Plavšić this year?
I think that's a big mystery. I mean, I know a lot of fans, you know, he wasn't what they expected a year ago. To me, I just look at the progress that guys in this program had made. You know, Grant Williams, Adamel Schofield. I mean, nobody's progressed more than John Fulkerson has from the time he was a freshman until last year, becoming a guy that, you know, led your team and scored and was a second-team All-SEC player, somebody that to drop 27 points in Rupp Arena against a good Kentucky team. So simply because of what Tennessee has been able to do in regards to player development, I think that Plavšić, I think it's way too early to write him off. And I guess my expectations are that he'll be a quality backup to Fulkerson in the middle. You know, what does that mean in terms of stats? I don't know. But I do expect him to be better.
Rob, Josiah Jordan James seems to be a big believer in Victor Bailey. What'd you make of his comments?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, Vincent practices and the kid is a just, you know, he's right behind East Pawns, in my opinion. He's probably just the best pure athlete on the team in terms of, well, I guess with Keon Johnson being here now, I might have to back up that comment, but he is a really good athlete. Just can fly. You know, I don't know if he's probably not faster than Jordan Bone up just getting up and down the court with the ball, but he's in that same zip code. He is a really, really top notch athlete. I think he'll be Tennessee's best on ball defender in terms of point guard. I think Keon Johnson has got a chance, even as a freshman, to be Tennessee's best defensive player in terms of being able to guard multiple positions, being able to be a shot blocker at 6'6", just as long as he is. But I think Bailey, as far as guarding opposing point guards, I think that'll be a big upgrade. Something Tennessee struggled with a lot last year after Lamonte Turner shut it down in December. And you know, not a knock on Vescovi, but that he had problems keeping some of the more athletic point guards in front of him last year. And I think that's something that Bailey will excel at.
Rob, Jimmy, and others probably have asked you this before, but just so for those that haven't heard, or maybe you change your mind on it, what would be a first game starting five for Rick Barnes, do you think, right now?
I think you pencil in Fulkerson and Pons, and then after that, I think you've got a ton of competition. I think it's very unsettled. For me personally, I think it's going to be hard to keep Jaden Springer and Keon Johnson out of that starting five. Now whether Rick wants to make them earn that and doesn't start the freshman immediately, I don't know about that, but I think those two guys would be two of the best five players on the team immediately. And then, I think it's a battle between Vescovi, Josiah, and Santiago for who's going to start at point guard. I mean, Springer can do some of that for you, but I think he's much better off the ball, just worried about being a pure scorer. But so Pons, right now, if it's me, I would go Pons, Fulkerson, Jaden, Keon Johnson, and either probably Bailey or Josiah, and I think it will be an intense battle.
And I think you'd mentioned Vescovi and James, and I was going to ask about Bailey, but you think Bailey's a potential starter?
I do, Jimmy, for defensive purposes more than anything. I mean, you know how much Rick values defense, and I think Bailey is probably going to be head and shoulders above those other two guys in terms of being an on the ball defender against opposing point guards. Now, I don't think he's a pure point guard, but you see that a lot in college basketball. I do think he's really made the effort, during the year that he was sitting out to adopt more of that mindset. He calls himself a combo guard. I mean, he's certainly capable of being your primary ball handler. But I think in the past he's been more of a scorer than a facilitator. But this team will need him to be more of a guy that looks to get others involved.
They need him to get others more involved. But do you think he is capable of being a good scorer for Tennessee?
Oh, yeah, he's a good three-point shooter. I mean, shot nearly 40% from behind the arc at Oregon. I mean, he can get in the paint. He can finish. Can certainly knock down open shots. So, yeah, he is not – that's not a deficit in his game at all.
Also, we were told by a source today that Jeremy Banks has an opportunity to return to the team. If he does certain things, it might be 3 weeks out. Your thoughts on that situation?
Yeah, I think the path has been open there for quite a while, Jimmy, from what I have been hearing for a long time. I think that he's certainly, if you follow him on some of the social media stuff, he's made steps to, be conciliatory to try and repair his image, after the incident that happened last year. And I anticipate that he'll be a part of the team when things hopefully get rolling in August. And Tennessee can use him. That inside linebacker depth is a, it's an issue for this team, I think, trying to identify guys. Certainly, Henry T. pencil him in to probably be the best player of the defense. But after that, you got some question marks. Morris Crouch is absolutely talented, but he's transitioning to that position after playing on the edge last year. They played inside some, but that's due to him. J.J. Peterson has been kind of an X factor that fans have been waiting on to see if the light bulb will come on for him. So he'll have an opportunity to play there, but certainly they need Banks and maybe a couple other guys.
If Banks is reinstated, that puts Tennessee, again, well over the 85 limit. But Brent Hubbs keeps telling me not to worry about that. So I guess I shouldn't, should I?
I'm listening to Hubs on that one too, Jimmy. I think that, I think Jeremy probably has a plan. I'd be very surprised if he doesn't whittle that down in time for fall practice.
Yeah, I would think so. I guess Rob Lewis of VolQuest.com. If you got a question or comment, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. We'll have more with Rob when we come back. Sports Talk 99.1 D Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
Guys, I'm bringing the party to you.
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes, along with Vince Ferrar, I guess, Rob Lewis, VolQuest.com.
Rob, where's Tennessee in the search for another cornerback to add to this 2021 class?
Nylon Green is the guy, Vince, that I think that's the dream scenario. Mm-hmm. Young man out of Georgia. I think they're in that, but that's a long way from being a lay down or anything of that note. Highly regarded guy, Clemson is in there pushing hard. Certainly hanging around Auburn. So that's, if they could just pick the guy, I would say that's the guy at the top of their board. Kind of an under the radar guy that Tennessee likes a lot that hasn't gotten kind of the publicity that Green has is Demarius McGee out of Pensacola, Florida. Tennessee was one of the first to offer him. Since then, things have kicked up a little bit. Ole Miss and Georgia have come in on the heels of Tennessee offering. But I think McGee is probably the most likely, and Nylon Green would be the, if Tennessee could just pick a guy out there, that's the guy that they would want.
Back to hoops and recruiting there. Any update on any of those big-time targets that Rick Barnes and his staff are in on, the Kennedy Chandlers and some of those guys? Any movement or identified shorter lists for any of those guys for Tennessee?
Not really an update, but there just seems to be a growing buzz that Tennessee is the team to beat for Kennedy Chandler. National, more and more national pundits, guys that cover recruiting, on a big picture scale, seem to think that Chandler is a heavy Tennessee lean right now. Now, I'm not under the impression that Kennedy's in a real hurry to do anything, but I think the sentiment out there right now seems to be that if Chandler was to decide today, that Tennessee would be in a good spot, and that would be a home run. I mean, as well as Rick has recruited in the past couple of years, Chandler would be the highest rated guy that Tennessee signed. He's the top ranked point guard of the class, number 10 overall. Kentucky, Duke, North Carolina, everybody is clamoring for him, and that's kind of like a quarterback. If you could get him, it would really help you with some other guys, in particular Jabari Smith, who's I don't want to compare a high school kid to Kevin Durant, but he's a 6'10 kid that can shoot it, that can handle the ball, and has that kind of game where he could step out and do some things offensively. He's rated number 5 in the class. I think if you get a point guard like Kenny Chandler, who is a facilitator as opposed to a score first point guard, then that's an attractive scenario for somebody like Jabari Smith to go play with somebody he knows is going to help him get shots up. Certainly, the biggest name out there is the number 2 prospect in the country, Paolo Banchero from out in Seattle. Tennessee continues to be heavily involved with him, but he's from Seattle. He's got the same kind of guys chasing him that Chandler does. Gonzaga, Kentucky, North Carolina, Duke. I think that's a little tougher pull just because of the competition and the distance from home. But he and Chandler are buddies. I mean, they've talked about maybe wanting to play together in college. But they're not a package deal. I don't want to put that kind of sentiment out there. I think Banchero will be a tougher pull. But Jabari Smith, who is from right outside of Atlanta, I think that looks a little more likely. I think it's important to his family that they're able to hop in the car and go watch him play, which they certainly be able to do it not just in Knoxville, but in a lot of other SEC places. It would be easy. And that's one that kind of strangely, all the blue bloods haven't really jumped in there. I mean, North Carolina's involved. Duke is is sniffing around, but that's the only official visit he took as a junior was to Knoxville. Tennessee got him in town right before things shut down at the end of March. I think made a really strong impression. And I wouldn't completely rule out LSU. His father played there, was a really good player in the late 90s, same name. And but right now, I think Tennessee's in a really good spot for Kennedy Chandler. And if they get Chandler, I think it really helps him with Jabari Smith.
Let's go to the phones where Steve is our next caller. Steve, you're on with Rob Lewis.
Hey, fellas.
Hey.
Hey. Rob, talk about this Gooch kid, offensive line, of course, out of East Tennessee. Talk about him a little bit. And also the Slaughter kid that we signed in this past class. Do you think that he's somebody that can contribute to the team pretty well as a true freshman?
And that's what Start with Gooch, plays at Tiny Kings Academy out in Seymour. He's a huge guy, 6'8", 340 pounds. Tennessee is, he committed to Auburn way back in April, committed early. I think Tennessee was a little, I would imagine, upset that, he didn't give them more of a chance. But Tennessee has not stopped recruiting him. Certainly, offensive line remains a need in this class, and he's a guy that they have kept the heat on. Whether they can flip him or not, I don't know, but they are certainly trying, and it's a long way until signing day. So I wouldn't say Tennessee's out on that one at all. As far as Slaughter, he's been he ended up being somewhat highly rated. He was really an under the radar kind of guy, defensive back out of Georgia. I like him a lot, and one of the reasons Chad Simmons, who is one of our Southeast regional guys, I've known Chad for a long time. He does a great job. He's not just somebody that works the phones. He gets in his car, goes out, sees a lot of games, sees a lot of practices, and he is really high on Slaughter likes him a lot, I know. That's one of the reasons that I'm a fan of him. He's 6 foot, 180, got good size. I think probably maybe more of a safety than a quarter, but I think he'll have a chance to contribute immediately on special teams. Yeah, I like that kid a lot.
All right. Okay. Well, okay then. What would it be if they had have another December signing date? How many months? Quite a few. So who knows what's going to happen? And they're not going to have high school football, are they, fellas? I mean, seriously.
that's still on the table.
It's still on the table. Too early to say. Alabama and Georgia have said that they're going to have it already. They're 4 feet ahead in those two states.
Right. Well, one other question. A friend of mine down here keeps up recruiting said there is a junior college kid at one of the junior in Oklahoma. I thought he said he was a defensive back, and said Tennessee really likes him, and it would be in this next class, the one going on now. And I was wondering if you knew about somebody like that.
Steve, that one's not ringing a bell, but that does not mean it's not true.
Yeah. Well, this person down here, the only one I've ever heard talk about this kid was him, so I'm really not sure what the deal is there. So, anyway. Well, okay. Well, Rob, I missed you yesterday, and I was told that you'd probably be on today, and I was told that Mike Keith gets y'all's 4 o'clock time on Tuesdays. So, I catch to make sure you was all on at 3.
Yeah.
And good to hear from you, to talk to you. And I think our recruiting is going to be just fine.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. Hey, Steve, we appreciate it. Thanks for the call. All right. Let's go to Alan ahead of a break. Alan, you're on with Rob Lewis.
Hey, guys. Thanks.
Hey.
Rob, you've answered most of my basketball questions, but one more that I've got for you. Are you familiar with a kid by the name of Reed Satterfield out of Greenville, Tennessee?
I am not.
Okay. Okay, well, he's a 2022 kid. He's a 6'2", 6'3", 2-guard. And before they shut down the state tournament, he put 42 points on the board. And, of course, they didn't get to go to Murfreesboro. But
I don't know. I remember seeing that, but I, as far as like a prospect, I have not heard, you know, recruiting scuttlebutt, but I do remember seeing where the kid from Greenville went for 40.
Yeah. I just wondered if you had any buzz on him at all, and I know he's ranked in the 20s in the state of Tennessee right now, but he sure got a shot. Going to football, the Peyton Page out of Greensboro, and the kid out of South Carolina slips my mind. Yes. Do you think we're going to get either one of those guys?
I think they have a much better shot with Dawkins right now. I mean, it's just, and Page hasn't come out and said anything, but just the recent buzz seems to be suggesting that Clemson is positioned themselves pretty well. You know, they waited. I think they tried to push him early. I think that kind of turned him off a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think Tennessee took advantage of that, and then I think Clemson, you know, kind of showed a little more patience, took some of the pressure off, and right now it feels like that it's going to be Clemson. I think they have a much better shot with Ingram Dawkins. That one kind of feels like it's Tennessee or South Carolina. You certainly can't dismiss the in-state school, but and Ingram Dawkins, I think, was ready to pick Tennessee last month when he was talking about making a decision. I think the Vols were the team to beat. I think South Carolina kind of threw the kitchen sink at him to get him to wait, hold off, and let them hopefully get him on campus again, obviously with the dead period extended until the end of August at least. That hasn't happened. But I like Tennessee's chances with Ingram Dawkins, so I certainly don't think it's a lock.
Yeah, I've got you. Is there any other defensive tackle out there that I'm not seeing that you think they're in on at all?
Well, not that he's new to the board, but I think Tennessee's gotten some momentum here is with Tywan Malone. And, that's going to be a tough one. He's from Jersey. He's a top 50 national player. A lot of people think Ohio State is the team to beat there, but I mean, he's got everybody, Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Michigan, and Penn State from up in that area. But Tennessee has made a recent push there. I think he's shown quite a bit of interest, but that's a big name on the defensive tackle board to keep in mind.
Okay, two guys that we've already got that I just like a little progress report on. The big kid that was like 350 pounds coming out of Pearl Cone in Nashville. How is he doing? And also the kid out of Memphis, Omari. I know that there was some confusion about whether or not he was an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman. Give me the scuttlebutt on those two, and I'll hang up and listen.
Oh, I think Omari definitely starts out on defense for sure. I think he's got a chance to be a good one. And the thing I like about Omari, I mean, among the other things that I like about Omari Thomas, besides just being a huge human being, he was a really good high school basketball player. In fact, he was a teammate of Kennedy Chandler, team that made the state finals, lost to Catholic. I like Thomas a lot. He's 6'5", 301, but he moves pretty well. And I think he has – I think defense is where – I think he's got a bright future there. The kid out of Nashville, I guess he means Elijah Simmons that was already on campus last year as a freshman. Without spring practice or any kind of open observation period, I don't really have an update on him. But I think he's a guy. I think he's got to get his weight down a little bit. But he's a logan. I think he has a chance. In the 3-4, I think he has a chance to be a solid nose guard.
Rob, would you rather talk recruiting or fly fish?
I would rather fly fish.
How'd it go yesterday?
It went really well. It went really well. Good day in the water with my son.
Yeah. Get some trout?
Got some trout. We did.
Very good. Very good. Hey, Rob, always great to catch up with you. Thank you for joining us. Look forward to visiting with you again next week.
Thanks, Rob.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Rob. That's Rob Lewis, the Jed Dance of Rivals. With his fly fishing yesterday, that's where he went. And good for him. He had a chance to get out and do that with his son. So, hey, when we come back, we've got more. We will discuss a variety of things. Again, we've got some NBA notes. We've got some notes about the NFL and SEC. We're also going to hear a little bit later from a couple of high school coaches locally. John Wilkerson able to catch up with Rusty Bradley of Grace Christian, Lamar Brown of West High School. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk, 99.1 The Sports Animal. Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Hines with Vince Ferrar. Vince pinch hitting for John Wilkerson this week. If you got a question, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. A couple of notes out there. Former Tennessee pitcher Zach Godley has been released by Detroit. Word is there are already some teams that have shown an interest in him, but he has been released by Detroit. And Vince, Florida's athletic director Scott Strickland revealed that he tested positive for the coronavirus. There were 26 more positive tests coming out of Florida. That brings their total to 29, and they have administered 200 and lost that note. 200 and something tests have been administered, and some of them were tested. 238 tests total. Some athletes were tested twice, but the athletic director at Florida, Scott Strickland, with the virus, and he is said to be okay now. He had it in June. That's a pretty significant number compared to Tennessee, right?
It is, and others like Kentucky, I think they haven't had any. So it just all of it is very different, and you know you hope that these are all very minor and they can recover quickly from them, and then it hits everybody differently, and then what you do with those tests. It seems like you mentioned that some of them were tested more than once, Jimmy. The
right.
Players haven't been on their campus a ton, but if they're coming back for workouts multiple times after being out, I wonder if the frequency of the tests needs to be ramped up. And it now, especially coming into July, once you start getting them into, you know, those workouts as the ramp up to the season, which was slated to start here in mid-July, you're going to have to, I think, ramp up those tests. And I wonder if the protocol is a little bit different once you enter into that stage versus just the voluntary, you know, air quote, workouts that were happening before where maybe you weren't doing it as frequently. So what does that do to the results? Are we going to start to get more because now you're testing them more frequently? Are they learning from the cases that they're seeing at other places? Will be interesting to see how that plays out. And I think these are very critical weeks, Jimmy, and how these kids handle themselves going in, and then we don't have an explosion of these cases, because if you start to have these cases inside the walls in addition to what's happening around the country, I think that's a quick way for us to, to lose grips on the season. You just hope that they're going to come back, a lot of those kids safe, and we can get going in the right direction. We'll see.
Yeah. Florida also, it is said that Paul Pasqualoni, former head coach at UConn and Syracuse, is headed to Florida to become an assistant to Dan Mullen on his staff. He is said to be the special assistant to Mullen himself. He is going to be charged with breaking down opposing defenses for Florida's offense. So we have seen that more and more with coaches. I don't know if I should say he started it, but it sure seems like Nick Saban set the trend for former coaches going in that direction.
For sure. And that reminds me of another aspect of this, Jimmy. We talk about people focus on the student-athletes. Well, young people, it's not a big deal. They don't die to COVID. Well, what about the older members of the staff, the coaches, and mm-hmm. other people that are on the staff? It's not just the kids. It's what if they pass it along to someone that is at higher risk?
Right.
So there's a lot of factors in it besides just young people are immune to it. There doesn't matter if they get it, you know, they don't die. And so I just think those are all things to consider. And look, there was a topic in the NBA. Should teams not allow some of their older coaches to participate? I think the Minnesota Twins are keeping two of their older staff members away because of that.
Right.
So those are all things they got to work out.
The Davey O'Brien Award watch list is out from Florida. We see Kyle Trask is on that list. Justin Fields at Ohio State, the former Georgia quarterback, is on the list. Mac Jones, Alabama quarterback, is on that list, along with Kellen Mond, Texas A&M. Jamie Newman, the quarterback at Georgia. There's Bo Nix from Auburn that is on the list. It's a pretty expansive list. I'm going to try to pick out just the SEC-type players. Yeah, so let's see there. 14 seniors, 8 juniors, 22, 8 sophomores, 30 people on that list. And so we hit some of the highlights with that. Of course, Trevor Lawrence is on that as well. But those are the quarterbacks that are listed on there. And I'm trying to think if I feel like there's an SEC quarterback that was omitted. None comes to mind right away. But I do think it's interesting Mac Jones made the list. In his limited playing time last year, he started a few games with the injury to Tua Tagovailoa. He had 14 touchdown passes and 3 interceptions. If you extrapolate that over the course of a season, that would have been about 42 touchdown passes, but certainly don't expect him to do that. But I do think he's a pretty good quarterback and will likely have a pretty good year. But there's not another quarterback from the league that I would have put on that list, I don't think. Although I'll say this, I'll be curious to see. There are a couple of them that could have potentially been there. KJ Costello at Mississippi State, John Reese Plumlee at Ole Miss, are two quarterbacks that some people think are primed to have really good seasons. We shall see. Those are the only other SEC. Is there anybody else from the SEC, Vince, that you think might be getting overlooked?
Was Miles Brennan on that list? Did you mention
he him? Was not. He was okay. Not.
He would be one that would come to mind for me because similar to Mac Jones with all that he has to work with there, Jamar Chase, and they still have a very talented group of wide receivers. They still have their five-star back in John Emery and more running back depth. They have to replace some guys on the offensive line, but I think that he's still going to have a lot to work with. So he's a guy that, yeah, I think he's not going to be Joe Burrow, but could put up good numbers. So that would be the first name that comes to mind for me.
I think that's a good call, and I will tell you this. Ed Orgeron told me at the SEC spring meetings last year that Joe Burrow's a great quarterback. You watch. And I didn't really completely buy in. Of course, I am now. Ed told me recently that Miles Brennan was going to be exceptional. He said, this guy's really good. Not to the Burrow. He didn't say not to the Joe Burrow degree. I'm saying that. But he said that Brennan's going to be really good. He's going to surprise some people. So I'm hesitant to question Ed Orgeron after he nailed it with Joe Burrow. So we'll see.
And Jimmy, he not only nailed it with Joe Burrow, but remember there was all the skepticism on how they would run that offense there with, yeah, Joe Brady. And he was adamant that it was going to be different this year. Everyone needed to see it first. But he was right from that standpoint, too. So he has earned the benefit of the doubt now with the way things have played out last year.
He has, and I didn't believe they would do what they did. I didn't think they would open it up and throw it all over the park and look like the New Orleans Saints. But, my goodness, they were amazing. And so I give them a lot of credit for that. But it's an LSU offense unlike any we'd ever seen before in history. And they've had some pretty good quarterbacks, but they've never done that before. So we'll see. We'll see what Brennan does, but I think you make a good point. I think he's got a good supporting cast. He's got the best receiver returning in the SEC, at least on paper, in Chase. Some other good players, some good running backs. So I think Brennan has a chance to put up some good numbers. Let me ask you this. Who do you think will have the better year, Mac Jones or Miles Brennan?
I would say Miles Brennan because there's more immediate competition for Mac Jones with Bryce Young, the five-star true freshman. So I think Young could take some snaps away, and then if he looks special when he gets his opportunity, then he may earn or force his way into the lineup. I think that's more up in the air than Miles Brennan. So I would say Miles Brennan, and Brennan, like we talked about, has so much to work with there as well. I would go with Miles Brennan. Where would you go?
You know, interesting. I want to take Mac Jones because I actually think he's the better quarterback, but he could potentially get beat out.
Right.
So I'm going to say this. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say in a similar fashion that Miles Brennan got beat out by Joe Burrow, where it's just if someone is that special, that's how you get beat out, even if you don't do anything wrong. And I'm with you. I think Mac Jones is pretty good.
Yeah, I do too. I'm going to go with Jones because I think he's going to beat out Bryce Young, and I think that means you're pretty darn good if you do that. And you've got two really good receivers, a great running back. I think the best running back in the league. I know that Kylan Hill's the leading returner, but I think Najee Harris is the best running back in the league. So I'm gonna go Mac Jones. But to your point, he may be splitting some reps with Bryce Young. That could very well happen, but which is why I hesitate a little bit. So, but we'll see what happens. Hey, when we come back, we will have more with Vince Ferrara. I'm Jimmy Himes. You're listening to Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Name a more iconic duo than the Budweiser Studios and Cumulus Broadcasting. It's all right. I'll wait. This is Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk with Vince Ferrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. Yesterday we talked about the Tennessee men's basketball team had four foreign players on it, and there was a concern that if they were taking online classes only, they might be sent back to their countries. We did also say that somebody, source, had said that would not happen. There are other alternatives that they can fix around this situation. And, Vince, we find out now that, and this person said, by the way, that Harvard and MIT were filing suit against this. The U.S. government agrees to rescind the order blocking foreign students taking classes online from living in the U.S. Judge announces in federal district court in Massachusetts, saying the government and plaintiffs reached a resolution. Vince, I think this makes sense.
Absolutely. And it didn't make sense before, but now this makes sense to fix it. There's plenty of things in this world that don't make sense right now, but I think it's the right thing. It's not normal circumstances, and look, there's students like everybody else. So if that's what the schools decide, it's just, you know, let them be students in the U.S. until we get this figured out, and they deserve to do it just like everybody else. So good job by them to get this one right, I think.
So this is in relation to what was going to happen. It was a COVID-19 issue, and some of these foreign students that were over here, from what I was hearing, were going to have difficulty in some cases getting back to their country, which was not allowing people to fly back into their country, which would compound it.
Right.
I do wonder this, though. So if COVID-19 goes away next year, is this regulation back in place? Because I do think the U.S. government typically doesn't want foreign students to come to the country and only take online classes. So I wonder if next year they're going to go back to the way the law is stated currently. Any thought on that?
It's hard to say. It depends on where we're at in the country at that point. And
but I'm saying we're done with it. We're done with it. So
right.
What happens? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of people that feel like that shouldn't have been in place in the first place. That if you're, if you're a student like everybody else, you should have the equal rules. So I don't know how that would play out. Do you have an opinion on it?
Well, I do wonder this. If you're a foreign student, why would you come to MIT and take online classes only? Is that a better education? So I would like to know more about the thinking behind it and how much sense does it make for you to come to a college in the United States and stay in your dorm room or your apartment and only take online classes? You can certainly do that if you're living in a foreign country. You can take them online. So I, without knowing more about it, on the surface, I'm not crazy about the rule, the law, okay? But then I'm wondering if they were trying to discourage people from just coming into the country and just taking online classes, and that was it. I do know this, though.
But what about if you're...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say that this was... I was wondering if this had a great impact. Were there a lot of people? Yes. There are a ton of international students, causing many, many millions of dollars in losses to colleges if they were forced to be deported back to their country and not enrolled at colleges here. I know that it's an enormous number. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I saw it the other day. So did you have another point?
Sorry, Art, my connection. I lost what you said there, so I didn't get to hear what you said because my connection went away and just came back a second ago. The only thing I was going to say is that one example would be is if you're an athlete, you know, what else are you doing on campus in addition to the online classes? Is there a reason for the online classes to help you be able to do some of those other things, in internships, athletics? What are the other things that you're doing with your college experience in addition to just the classes? Those would be some of the other factors in why you would, you know, allow it or not allow it.
Yeah. Okay. That's Vince Ferrara. I'm Jimmy Himes. When we come back, we're going to talk NFL. We'll be joined by Mike Keith of the Tennessee Titans. With Vince Ferrara, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.